This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega.
Pull up like 20D, bet we just might shut this thing down.
The Women's World Cup starts this Friday in France, and The Takeaway will be bringing you different stories about the tournament and the teams over the next few weeks. But today we start with our own United States team. The United States are defending champions and the favorites this time around, and U.S. Soccer, the governing body, has been rolling out a marketing blitz for the team. By the way, the music you're hearing is from their slick roster announcement video. But at the same time, the star players are in an open legal battle with U.S. Soccer over gender discrimination. So what's going on behind the scenes? For that, we have Lindsay Gibbs, sports reporter at Think Progress and co-host of the feminist sports podcast, Burn It All Down. Lindsay, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what is the lawsuit that the players brought against U.S. Soccer?
Yeah, so this is a lawsuit under the Equal Pay Act and the Civil Rights Act of Title VII. And it says that they are being discriminated against because of their gender due to the fact that they've earned as little as 38% per friendly match than the men's team has. And they're also complaining about a lack of number of games, the location the games have been played, and coaching and medical treatments. They're applying for class action status. They want back pay, damages, and they filed this on International Women's Day 3 months ago. So they are certainly making a stand and making a larger statement with this lawsuit.
At the same time, as we mentioned, the season has begun. There is this odd tension here between the fact that the players are suing U.S. Soccer and at the same time, they're taking part in the marketing and promotion ahead of the World Cup. What does that tell us, Lindsay?
Well, look, I think they want to make this system that they work in better, and they're fighting for that. They're not fighting right now to burn the whole system down, but because they love what they do, they love what they stand for. But this has become very much a part of their story and a part of what they're willing to fight for. And look, it has been this way for the U.S. Women's National Team since the team was founded, since the very beginning in 1999, after those women won the World Cup. They boycotted some matches in order to demand a better contract. So this is just part of the narrative of who the U.S. Women's National Team is.
Of course, we know there are some that are being more visible and outspoken than others. Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe, are not being silent about their issues with U.S. soccer. Tell us a little bit about their approach.
Yeah, every time a microphone is in their face, they are willing to take this to account. I think they very much know that they cannot really be penalized. They have the platform. They have the talent. They have the skills. And they are really willing to lead this movement and maybe stand up for players who feel a little bit more vulnerable and feel like maybe their spot on the team isn't quite as secure. So I think that's been a huge part of this, is the fact that the biggest stars, the biggest names are willing to address this. Now, they have said that during the World Cup itself, they don't want to answer a lot of questions about this. You know, they want to focus on what is happening, you know, on the field. They have it's going to be the most competitive Women's World Cup ever. So even though they're favorites, this is far from a given that they're going to defend their title. So I think, you know, they take that task very seriously, but they spoke about it openly in Media Day. And you're right, it is a little bit strange because these Media Days are being funded and run by U.S. Soccer, and they are, you know, they're there saying, yes, we're happy to be here, but we're not happy with exactly what we've been given, and we're no longer just going to sit back and pretend that everything is fine.
Has U.S. Soccer formally tried to prevent players from speaking about the issue, whether telling them that they're not allowed to do that or in any sort of media day, or are players allowed to say what they want to say?
For the most part, players are saying what they want to say, and whether I don't know that U.S. Soccer has much of control of this. I think for some of these players, their platform and their solidarity has outgrown, you know, the control of U.S. Soccer in some ways. And, you know, it's special that they are that they are using that platform, because so many women in so many countries don't have that power. still feel really vulnerable. So what they are doing is not just kind of empowering people within the U.S. system, but I think it is helping women who are fighting their own battles within women's soccer within the women's soccer community globally, and also just women who are, you know, more vulnerable in their places of work who want to speak out. So as far as I'm aware, there hasn't been any direct pushback, though I know behind the scenes it is a tense time.
So Lindsay, the players took a different tactic in dealing with U.S. soccer before the 2015 World Cup. Tell us what their strategy was then and how it's different from today.
Yeah, well, a lot of the focus around the 2015 World Cup, remember, they hadn't won a World Cup since 1999. So there was a lot of pressure to get back into the championship trophy. But a lot of the focus was on suing FIFA for the artificial turf that they were being forced to play on in Canada. So that was a lot of the focus leading up to the Women's World Cup in 2015. After that is when they really found their activist voice, because in the victory tour after the Women's World Cup, they realized we're selling out, we're doing all these things, and we're still getting paid so much less than the men's teams are. And we're having to play on turf, which is very dangerous, and the men barely ever have to play on artificial turf. At one point in Hawaii, they went to a match and the turf was peeling off the field and it had rocks embedded on it, and it was so dangerous that they ended up boycotting that match, and U.S. soccer had to cancel that match because the conditions were so dangerous. So during that victory tour, I think is when they really realized, well, we finally got this win again. Our popularity has never been greater, and yet that hasn't solved any of the problems about treatment, you know? So that's when you saw them launch the Equal Play, Equal Pay campaign, which really took over social media. And then in 2016, they launched a wages discrimination suit with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in the federal government.
And in terms of, I mean, we obviously know that these games are going to be get a lot of eyeballs. Lots of folks are excited about the season. If there are fans who want to somehow get involved in supporting U.S. soccer, what should they do?
You need to watch, you need to tweet about it, you need to like all their posts on social media, tell your friends to watch. It could seem a little bit counterintuitive to support these matches and these social media accounts that are run by U.S. Soccer, who these women feel like are discriminating against them. But the more clicks that these things get, the more that these women can show their marketability and how important they are to the U.S. soccer community and to the worldwide community, the more in demand they can prove that they are, the more that's going to help their case and the more that's going to strengthen their ability to continue this fight.
And we've just got a couple seconds left. Just curious, do we know a timeline for this case and more or less when we should expect to see a result?
I've heard that probably early next year. As we know, these court cases take quite some time.
And we'll be watching. Lindsay Gibbs is a sports reporter at Think Progress and co-host of the feminist sports podcast, Burn It All Down. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's all for us today. Thank you so much for being with us. If you want to listen again, you can check out our podcast on iTunes or Spotify or anywhere you listen. I'm Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.